Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Keeper of Flames by Joss Walker and R.L. Perez, narrated by Aaron Moon. Prologue. Layers of Darkness. Rome was made of layers, ancient to modern, all stacked upon one another, waiting patiently to be found by those with a mind to search. So many treasures were hidden in those golden chambers, buried under centuries of dirt and rubble. It took money and fortitude, and a burning desire to discover the truth of the city, to make even the tiniest dent into the past. The Basilica di San Clemente had a head start. The masterpiece was 5 minutes from the Colosseum, a beloved stop for tourists and antiquarians alike. The archaeological dig burrowed into the earth and held regular tours to show fascinating layers of the city time forgot. It was to this place, deep under the streets of Rome, that Ruth Thorne found herself drawn. Something there, though she didn't know what. A voice inside her pushed her to go, and so she went. She knew not what she was looking for, and it didn't matter. Whatever the voice wanted, it would show her when she arrived. She entered at the assigned time, hooked up with a tour group, listening to the guide's excited patter with half an ear. She followed in the tour's footsteps through the main basilica, down a narrow flight of stairs to the second basilica, the foundation for the newer building, then down further still. Her feet on the stone made a whisper, and she bit back a laugh. Of course she was entering a tomb. It was cold, dark. The tunnel was long and smelled of dust and rock, minerals and mold, elemental, the very earth itself. The rock ceiling was low and sloped, cleared into hand-carved archways above the chamber. A hole bored through the rock let in light from above. A pattern spilled out from the center. It looked like a five-petaled flower. The voice reverberated through her so loudly she jumped, expecting heads around her to turn. But no, it was inside her. Only she could hear it. It was in her mind now. Her conscience, her very being. They were one creature.
"This," it intoned.
She was standing in front of a stone edifice with what looked like carvings of winged Mercury on his rounds, but the guide said the word Mithras, and Ruth felt a thrill go through her. Mithras, the hidden god. The leader of a religious movement that predated Christ himself. Some called it a cult, but what Ruth saw now, what she felt in her bones, was not a cult figure, but the markings of a powerful magician. This was where he'd conducted his magic, and his followers sat on the channels of hard rock lining the chamber to gape in awe at his powers. Ancient adepts who wanted some of that dark power for themselves and worshipped the god who could bring them closer to his immaculate strength. A true master. One of those rare creatures that the kingdom sought. The god himself was gone, disappeared into the ether where all things go when no one believes in them any longer. But the power he'd left behind? Oh, the power thrummed in her veins. She shivered in delight. The power emanating from the edifice made her entire body tingle.
"Take," the voice inside her demanded.
With a cold, delighted smile, she did. Chapter 1. All Hands on Deck. Crystal City, Virginia.
"We have a situation. We need you to come in."
Amanda Newport, director of the Torrent Control Organization, pressed the red end button on her encrypted phone and frowned at the now dark screen. She never liked being summoned to the CIA director's office, but especially not on a Sunday. She was in the middle of making a batch of pancakes, had just folded in the egg whites, which meant the batch would be ruined if she put the batter in the refrigerator.
No help for it, though. She dumped the batter down the sink, put the blueberries and cashew milk back in the fridge. At least I hadn't put the blueberries in yet. That would truly be a waste. And headed to her bedroom to dress. Urgent it may be, but she wouldn't show up without at least putting her hair in a bun and pulling on some jeans. Her apartment in Crystal City had several advantages, only one being a spectacular view of the Washington Monument and the various marble buildings that made up the D.C. landscape. It was also less than a 15-minute drive to Langley. She was on campus 20 minutes after the call, striding past the Kryptos sculpture with barely a glance at its magnificence. Three of the codes had been cracked, but the fourth remained a mystery. She'd often wondered if its significance was related to her division, the TCO. There was magic in codes, too, after all. Sunlight caught the edge and flashed as she passed. If she'd stopped to watch, she might have noticed how the sun's reflection made the corner glow green for the barest of moments. But she was in a hurry, and Kryptos would have to wait for another day. She presented herself to Joshua's admin, Gladys, a lovely but intimidating relic from the agency's golden age of the Cold War, and was waved through. Joshua was the CIA director's direct report and Amanda's immediate boss. She spied him standing behind his desk, back to the door. What she wasn't expecting was the director himself, long body hunched into one of Joshua's leather chairs. Joshua turned when she entered and waved Amanda to the sofa, taking the chair next to the director.
"Amanda," the director greeted her. "Thanks for coming in."
"Isaac," she replied, just as coolly. While Joshua had always been a steady presence in her career, he wasn't a presidential appointee, but actual CIA staff. The directors changed almost as often as the country voted in new leadership. Isaac Fitzgerald was the latest in a string of directors, and she got the sense he thought her division a bunch of mumbo-jumbo. Just to make him sweat, she flicked a fire spell at the gas fireplace against the far wall, and flames rose, crackling merrily. She wasn't above showing off a little to get her point across. "Magic is real. Get used to it, buddy."
"Sorry to drag you in on a Sunday, but there's a problem in Rome. It seems there was an explosion and building collapse at the Basilica di San Clemente."
"Uh-oh. Jane, I'm gonna kill you." "A terror attack?" she asked, hoping against hope they said yes.
"Unknown," Joshua replied. "This just happened. We sent a team. There are casualties. Witnesses reported seeing a blue light encompass the area before the explosion happened. Similar reports came in after the earthquake at Fontainebleau. We thought this might be your people."
With a sigh, Amanda nodded. "That is entirely possible. I do have a team in Rome as we speak. I will reach out immediately and..." The director sat forward in his crumpled leather chair.
"Amanda, I need you to be frank with me. It feels as if your division is slipping. The president has expressed his desire to see these international accidents stop. It's making his foreign policy difficult to manage, not to mention the extreme outlay of money that it takes to clean up your messes. If you can't get control of your people..."
Amanda's back straightened. "Sir, with all due respect, my people are the only reason the world hasn't collapsed into chaos. The attacks we've thwarted far outstrip the few that have occurred. We're lucky to have found a very powerful magician who we are in the midst of training. She..." The director scoffed.
"Jane Thorne, the 23-year-old librarian. You can hardly be pinning your hopes to save the world on her. I've seen the video feeds. She takes nothing seriously. She shows a disturbing lack of respect for authority. She only partially follows orders. Now you have her completely untrained sister and an Irish national boyfriend on this team, not to mention a French national..."
Sample complete. Ready to continue?